Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paul Hawksby
and Andy Jacobs,
and welcome to a special podcast as we celebrate the life of our great friend Andy Smart, Comedy Store player, ball runner, cheese chaser, Creston runner, Farnborough fan, and above all else, lovely man and a good friend to both of us, who we suddenly and tragically lost 2 weeks ago at the age of just 63.
Yeah, it's Andy's funeral today, hence why we're not presenting the show this afternoon, but we thought it was an appropriate time to reflect on some of our favourite memories of Andy's many hundreds of appearances on the show after the last two decades, over the last two decades, I should say.
I mean, there were so many times when, you know, we'd be doing an outside broadcast and we're saying we've not had Andy Smart in for a long time because he was always guaranteed gold. He'd always have a story, whether it was an old story or whether it was something he'd recently done.
Good stories and good atmosphere. He created a good atmosphere because he was so much fun.
He was a great giggler, and he always contributed, which is why we always had, we always loved to get him on. And I think why he was very popular with the listeners. As you said, that kind of atmosphere he created.
Fantastic sporting knowledge, Andy.
Yeah.
He absolutely
did. You know, he loved sport. He was someone who kept kind of weird hours because of the Comedy Store.
Mm.
So you'd often see him sort of wake up in the morning and see he'd been tweeting at 3 o'clock in the morning.
That's how I'd know about the World Series and things like that. I'd see Andy's tweets.
Watching baseball live. Aussie Rules was another great love of his. He was into that. But you knew him longer than I did because you worked with him on Channel 4, didn't you?
Yeah, funnily enough, on this year, I'm just looking at a text that I sent to him because he did a thing about it being 35 years since he presented the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
This was in February, and I said to him, blimey, I can't believe it's 35 years. I shall go and have an iced coffee to celebrate, or a coffee with ice in it. This is a story about how... The thing is, I'd only met him 6 weeks earlier. It's a long, complicated story, but he was doing the Channel 4 American football, and although they were doing it okay, they were making a lot of factual errors, and I knew a lot about the sport, so I wrote to Derek Brandon, who was the producer, and said, look, I can help these guys.
Yeah,
I think they're good, but I can help them. So that's how he got, and then 6 weeks later I was out in San Diego doing the Super Bowl with them, standing at the back of the
this was him
box.
And Angelo, the Vicious
Angelo
Boys.
Abella, yeah, that's yeah, right.
They were kind of street performers. They won street performers of the year. They were brilliant, weren't
absolutely
they?
Brilliant. And their guest, I mean, and they were quite punky looking at the time.
Yeah.
And their guest was the ultra straight Miami Dolphins legendary coach Don Shula.
Yeah.
It was such a mad combination, really. And
those two sort of dicking around and very straight Don Shula.
And Don Shula looking at them and thinking,
nonplussed, wondering what was going on.
And my mother at the time, it was in Miami, and my mother at the time lived in Miami, and she liked coffee with, she'd put a cube of ice in it to cool it down.
So
Don Shula, I was like not only was home, I was kind of the runner on the show as well.
Right.
So Don Shula wanted an iced coffee.
Yeah.
So I brought him back a coffee with a cube of ice in it. He gave me such a ridiculous look.
Yeah.
We always had that joke together. So it was fun.
Well, it was I only kind of got to know him through you because when we first started doing the show, you said, oh, Andy knows his sport. He'll be good. And I think we got him in to do a couple of American sports things.
Yeah.
And then, of course, because of his love of Farnborough, and he was into his football. And then he just became this kind of...
I remember very early, one of the St. Patrick's Day in a pub in London with
That's
him.
Right.
I think that was one of the earliest OBs we did with him, which was
and I remember
with Paddy Power and him.
Finishing
and
the show at 4, I think staying in the bar to about 10, 11 with him. So he never said no to anything.
No.
I think that's what he always... Every opportunity that came along, on the off chance it could lead to something else, he said yes to. And that's, he kind of lived
his life. He said
yes
to life, he did.
Yeah, it's an amazing way. It's a tough way to... to live it, because you take a lot of risks, but he was a bit of a risk taker, wasn't he? Absolutely.
We're
so
really
we're going to reflect that. You'll hear a little bit of Cheltenham, because what we've decided to do is take a look back over some of our favourite moments. And ultimately, it led to a book deal, because he contacted us one day and he says, I had a publisher come to me. They've heard me on your show a few times and they want to do a book.
It's incredible, isn't it?
So that's it. It came about. It was his autobiography, 2019. It was called A Hitch in Time. And we got him into the studio to obviously talk about it once it was published. And let's just kick you off with this story. He was telling us about the time he was studying at university in Liverpool and how it regularly took him to Anfield to watch Liverpool play.
Station A, which was sort of the central Liverpool police station, on a Saturday morning, we found that if you walked up and down between about 10:30 and 11, they'd always want someone for a police line up around there. And you used to get £2 for a police line up. And me and Jed Smith and Jed McCormick, we used to go down there. And the policeman would come out and go, oh, not you three again. All right, come on then. And we'd all go in, and then we'd stand in the line, and me and Jed would have competitions to see if we could get picked.
That's not a good thing, is it, really?
It's not clever. No. And then one time we were in there, and the policeman came in, and he said, right, before I bring the accused in, I want you all to take your shoes off. And I just went, why? And he went, well, because he's got blood all over his. And we went, well, he obviously did it then, didn't he? And he went, yeah, but we need an identification. So we all had to take our shoes off and show the potatoes in our socks.
So you used to use that money to go and buy tickets to
Then it was like 15p on the bus to Anfield. It was £1.50 to get in the cop. And then you'd have money to a bit of money for a hot dog and bus trip.
Oh, yeah. God, man, the kids are listening. Yeah. £2.
£1.50 is plenty.
It was 25p a pint in those days. So, yeah, you get eight pints for £2.
Man, that's good.
And that was a good Liverpool side. You went into some of those great glory nights in Europe. You got to, didn't you?
Fantastic, yeah. I mean, I can remember when they lost to Forest in the semi-final. Shilton saved a penalty, I think. And I've never seen 12,000 grown men cry before. It was just... The whole of the cop was just sobbing that they'd gone out of the... they were so emotional on the cop in those days.
Yeah, that was just a kind of example of the sort of stuff the book is full of. It's all about how he spent sort of much of the late 70s, early 80s hitchhiking. Again, that thing of never saying no. Getting in anybody's car. There's a few hairy moments in there and quite a lot of ridiculous stories of what would happen to him when he hitchhiked.
The main story is a hitch that I did in 82, which was I'd had this unrequited love affair with this woman who didn't really want to know anything about me. And we'd had the riots in Liverpool, and it was it was 45% unemployment in Toxteth where I lived. So it was just I needed to get out of Liverpool. So I decided to sell everything and hitchhike around Europe for the summer. And it was the Spanish World Cup. So I on my birthday, the 16th of June, it was England versus France in Bilbao. So that was the main aim of the trip. So I set off at the start of June and just sort of headed south, really.
Wow.
It's amazing, isn't it, to be able to do that?
And you've met along the way. I mean, generally, you've met
a few weird people.
Stories.
You take something from every lift. I mean, that was the joy of hitchhiking. I mean, it's a shame that people can't do it now, because I think people are just scared now. But I mean, you got to meet so many different people, you got to hear different points of view, you got to learn things from almost everyone who gave you a lift would tell you something interesting. And I used to get bored of telling the same story over and over. So I would just make it up that I was like a dry stone wall builder, or I'd tell them that I was a mole catcher and I was, you know, there was a big infestation down in Norfolk and that's where I was headed.
But people take you in, don't they, at different times? You know, they say, where you're headed for, it's a cold night. And people say, oh, look, come and stay at our place. And there'd be a concern about doing that now. But, you know, you were trusting and you did that. And generally you came up trumps.
I mean, I was in a position of privilege being, you know, a white male, but you know, I don't think there were as many women hitchhiking. But it was people would just say, look, you're not going to get a lift, why don't you come and stay? And it was there's a couple in the book, and one of them was I was hitching back from my first ever Edinburgh, and Got picked up by two young lads, a guy called Billy and his brother. And they said, look, you're not going to get a lift past Selkirk. That's where we're going. Why don't you come and stay at ours? And it was a big house. And they took me in, and it was like at 1 a.m. They said, well, tell our parents that you're staying. And they put me in the African room, which was this massive bedroom with masks and shields. Wow. and assegai on the wall. And they said breakfast at 8:30, but I didn't have a watch, so I didn't know what the time was, but I could hear people moving about. So I got up and washed my face and hair, went downstairs, and there was a bloke cooking breakfast in the kitchen in his dressing gown. And I said, hello. And he went, oh, you're the hitchhiker then. And he turned around and it was Sir David Steele.
No.
And I just, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And Lady Steele made me a whole bag of sandwiches for back to Liverpool.
To take on the road. Yeah. There's a story. You were looking for a lift from Leicester to Coventry. Hot day. You'd wait for nearly an hour. Then a lorry stopped, big articulated lorry. You ran down the slip road and climbed in. The driver's a small, chubby man wearing what looked like a woman's blouse.
Yes.
Pick up the story, Mr. Smart.
Well, I was, I was just happy to get a lift at first, and I was looking out the front of the cab, and it's nice being in front of a big lorry cab and seeing the whole road. But occasionally, I'd sort of, like, out of the corner of my eye, I'd sort of glance over, because I couldn't work out whether it was a blouse or not. And then he just sort of went, I see you've noticed my breasts. And I went, what? And he sort of hoisted his top up and he had a bra on. And I said, oh, right. Like you do.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, you're probably wondering what these are. And I said, well, you know, they're breasts, aren't they? Why have you got them? And he said, well, and what had happened was when the Beatles had gone over to Hamburg.
Mm.
He was a young man and he decided to follow them over. He wanted to be a singer in a rock and roll band, and he got to Hamburg and he'd sung with a couple of bands, but it hadn't really worked out. And then he'd become one of the guys who stands on the Reeper Balm outside one of the clubs and tries to get people to go in and have a drink.
Yeah.
And the owner said, look, I'll give you £10,000 if you'll have these breasts. Implants, because it'll get people into the club. And he went, yeah, all right then.
He said, yeah, all right then.
Yeah, because he thought, oh, you know, I'll do it for a year or two, and then I'll get the removed.
Because he used the money, he got a band going with the money.
Yeah, he got a band going, but again, they didn't really make it big, and he came back with no money to get the reversal done. And then he thought, well, I'll get a job with the lorry. So he took his test and he became a lorry driver. And then he started saving up, and then he met this woman, and then they started having kids, and then they needed a house, and he just never got round to getting the money together.
But he actually met a woman, even with these...
Well,
I think he might.
So, those teeth had put me off. What are you doing earlier on? Frighten the life out of people.
Did he have a big cleavage?
Oh, I don't have to go into details, do
I? Don't know, I didn't see him from the front, I only saw him from the side.
If he'd gone push-up. But you say... You say in the book, and he'd be in his 70s now. So if he's there listening,
he lived up in Lancashire, so up near Burnley, he said. So
did he ever get the money? Maybe we can crowdfund it now.
Did he ever do page 3?
Oh, Andy, stop it. You're a bad man.
Yeah, funny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the other things we always chatted to Andy about was Pamplona, the running of the balls. And he fell in love with the place. Lord knows how many times.
He was a real expert on
it. He went there. You know, no, he absolutely loved it. But he talked about this in the book. And this kind of, it was in Pamplona where he sort of found his calling as a street performer and a comedian.
I ended up in Pamplona to do to do my first bull run, and then I was very dehydrated. I
wonder why that was. Was it the hot conditions?
It was hitching across a desert with a hangover. Yeah, and then when you get to Pamplona, people just thrust bottles of wine in your hand, and the next thing I knew, I'd fell asleep on a landing inside someone's house. And when I woke up, all my money and my passport and camera, everything had been stolen. So I thought, right, I still wanted to, and I could hear the run in the background when I woke up. That's what had woke me up. So I thought, well, I'm going to have to stay another day and do the run because I really wanted to do my first run. So I went to the police station, and I went to someone very kindly lent me a fiver in Besaitas, and I managed to sort of store my bag and get some bottles of water. And then I borrowed four oranges off an American woman and juggled in the square for 8 hours and made about 80 quid. And I thought, which was a lot of money in those days. And I thought, well, this is it. I've found my métier. I'm going to be a juggler. And that sort of started me off at Covent Garden. Then I went to Covent Garden, juggled there, met Angelo Abella. And we formed the Vicious Boys, and that's sort of where the book sort of ends.
Yeah.
Within sort of 6 months of meeting Angelo, we had our own TV show, and I was making quite a lot of money. And
then,
amazing.
And then I spent all that money on travel. I went around the world 3 times, and then that's the sort of start of the next phase after that.
So. That's the next story. The thank yous are interesting as well. some of the thank yous in the book. You thank some unlikely people, including the front man of the excellent band Elbow, Guy Garvey.
Well, yeah, Guy was, because I had about 8 months living with Guy's sister, Karen, and two other girls in a flat, in a house in Liverpool, and went to her wedding. And because I didn't really know anyone at the wedding, she said, oh, could you look after my six-year-old brother? And that was Guy. So I spent the whole day looking after a six-year-old Guy Garvey. Yeah.
playing
football with him in the church car park.
Have you met him since?
Yeah. He remembers. He used to come to the Comedy Store in Manchester. We used to do a show up there every Thursday, and he used to come regularly and watch it. And then weirdly, when we did the 12 Angry Men in all the comics doing the play, the 12 Angry Men, we took it to Adelaide Festival. Mm. And Wellington and Perth. But in Adelaide, we were sat in a restaurant and he came and sat at the table next to us.
Wow.
And I went, all right, Guy. And he went... So we went to see him in Adelaide. Yeah.
Yeah, what a fantastic story. One of Andy's many. And Elbow's manager, Phil, is a big fan of the show and listens all the time. And he was listening to the show and he heard Andy had passed away. And he said how sad he was and had made a donation to Crisis.
Great.
And I reminded Phil that Guy had known Andy back in the day and he'd had a little kick around with him when he was a kid. And Phil said that's probably about the last time Guy ever kicked a football. So he has to remember that as well. Now, the other thing was the documentary. He made a documentary with Nick Hancock for the 98 World Cup around the Iranian football team and that huge game against the USA at that tournament. And Andy and Nick became kind of part of the Iranian squad. You know, a couple of Westerners going in there to tell their story. They were very well received. And so when Iran got to the 2014 World Cup and we were out there working for TalkSport, Andy flew out. And he stayed in Brazil. We stayed in Rio and we spent an awful lot of time together.
We had a lot of fun, didn't we?
We did have a lot of fun. He was with us for the week. And again, he had stories, didn't he? He just stayed with this family on the outskirts of one of the favelas, I think, and just sort of kicked in one of their spare bedrooms.
It was fairly typical, though.
Yeah, that was just... But he said he got to know them and met the family and absolutely loved it. And we got chatting about that. We got onto the subject of our night out we'd all had together while we were over in Brazil.
Andy, I think it's worth having a chat about why you came to Iran, Nigeria. You have a bit of previous with Iran, don't you?
Yeah. 98, I was lucky enough to make a documentary, well, a comedy documentary with Nick Hancock, where we followed the Iranian team around the French World Cup. And I was very, very lucky to be in Tehran the night they beat USA 2-1, or the Great Satan, as we like to call them. And it was an amazing night. At 3 o'clock in the morning, there was sort of about 3.5 million people on the streets, no alcohol involved, just going crazy. It was wonderful.
Yeah. You featured in that little moment because you were telling me last night they wanted a shot of you in Tehran, in the square, when that was going on. And there was a slight fear they might think you were American.
Well, the fixer said I wouldn't get out of the car if I was you, because they'll think you're American, they might beat you up. And I said, well, I'm not getting out of the car then. And the director went, we need the shot. So I got out of the car, and before I knew it, I was being chased across this square. There was about 250,000 people in this square. And I got chased into the middle. There was a fountain which I climbed, and I turned around and went, whoa, hang on. And I said, right, I can name the team. I went, Abadzada, Kakpour, Azizi, Karimi, Madavikia, and Esteli. I went through the whole team, and they went, oh, he's all right. He knows the team.
And it's really
worked in your favour, because you were telling us the other night you bumped into, you're quite fated. They know you, don't they?
Well, that was the weird thing, because I got off the plane in Sao Paulo because I was getting a connecting flight to Curitiba from there. So I was waiting in the lounge. The immigration took forever. And while we were in the lounge, this bloke came up and he said, "Oh, I know you." He said, "I sat next to Nick Hancock during the Yugoslavia game in '98.
Wow.
And I'm in the documentary. So I went, "Oh, hello." And then once he'd spotted me, then every Iranian in the hall, and they were all getting the same flight to Curitiba, so I was just, I must have had my photo taken with about 30 different Iranians.
It's fantastic.
And it was, yeah, and then we got to the game, and it was the same at the game. It was just, it was nil-nil, but we all knew it was going to be nil-nil. I had a nice little bet on it, and so I was quite happy with nil-nil. That was too mean. That was their big moment.
So anyway, we're going to, and you've got your food diet every day. What a feature this has become. Beautiful.
Well, you wouldn't be. I don't want to be croaking all the way through it.
Yeah. So anyway, this won't be news to Andy Smart because he witnessed most of this being consumed. But Andy Jacobs, let's have your Brazilian food diary.
Okay, I started off with a very nice two scrambled eggs. I also made a couple of scrambled eggs for John Norman. I didn't eat them out of the pan, I ate them on a plate.
That makes a change. You made them out of the pan, you're like Cletus the other day. Terrible.
With a roll. Then I had joined you at Budgeon's for a croissant, pan au chocolat.
We go to all the best coffee shops. It's like, but it's their version of Budgeon's. They've got a cafe out
the
back.
It's a supermarket.
It's the best coffee we've found since we've been here.
It's really mad. It's really mad.
On the corner over there, you get a glass of instant. It's not great. Not that we're complaining.
We're not complaining. No. Where I had a croissant and a pan au chocolat. Then at lunch with Mark Saggers, we had meat samosas and prawn croquettes, which were rather nice. Then during the... they were.
This is what they want, isn't it?
This is my favourite
bit. The people
bit.
From Sony are listening.
Oh, yeah.
This next bit.
During the game, I ordered a cheesy donut.
Yeah. Oh, this was weird, because it's basically donut dough. It tastes just like a donut.
Sweet dough. Yeah.
And when you bite into it, instead of... of jam or custard.
A massive lump of
hard processed cheese.
I removed.
Which Andy removed surgically with his hand, like he's taking someone's appendix out, and dumped on the plate with his hands and said, "Does anybody else want that?" No, surprisingly not.
Not till it stopped sweating, anyway.
Yeah. Yes, I removed the cheese and used the donut to absorb the beer.
Yeah.
So that was quite good.
To an extent, anyway. more of that to follow.
To an extent. Then in the evening, having avoided the moose and telling him we weren't going anywhere, we popped along to...
too harsh, this end. You're too... Just don't be... You can be too honest.
Galetto Sat, which is one of the... Well, we'll hear about it. I don't want to say what we said. It's a lovely chicken restaurant.
Yeah.
And it's not unsurprisingly, I had chicken.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
We had three whole chickens.
We had three
or four of us.
It was a spring chicken, which allowed me to come up when he came up and said, "Oh, you're no spring." So actually, you are. You are a spring chicken, yeah.
And talk about a carbo...
Yeah, we had spring... And they had chips with it, rice. There you go, get enough carbs there, mate.
Yeah.
And what felt like dust.
No, yeah. It was polenta.
Polenta.
It was a kind
semolina,
of semolina.
Semolina.
A hard bit of
but
egg.
Had hard, yeah, had fried
hard
egg
fried scrambled
polenta
egg.
In a semolina dust and a whole chicken. That was our dinner last night.
Honestly, I felt like Mo Farah before the London Marathon.
Yeah.
Like,
it really carved up.
Yeah.
Except that we didn't go and run 26 miles. We had a couple of drinks, didn't we?
No, and then I finished off with four caipirinhas.
Yeah.
It was quite pleasant, really.
And he instigated the fight. Andy and I were quite a bit to go on, but him and the producer are getting a bit sort of fever pitch. They had to have another. Let's have one more, shall we? Goodness sake.
That's what
so anyway, is that it? Is that, have you, Andy? You, yeah, that's it.
That's it, yeah.
Now, the cornerstone of Andy's, what he called a living, I'm sure, was the Comedy Store Players. And, I mean, he travelled the world. He had an incredible life, just travelling around the world, performing for people, just improv. From on sort of cruise ships.
Very good at it.
They were always out in the Far East working a lot for expats overseas.
Yeah. Yep.
Him and the whole troupe had such a brilliant life doing that. And one of the other performers from the Comedy Store Players joined us one year at Cheltenham along with Andy. It's his great mate and one of the Comedy Store Players, Steve Frost. And they told us a few old war stories, didn't they, from life on the road overseas with the Comedy Store Players.
Well, yeah, we've been lucky enough to see racing all over the world. We've been to Happy Valley in Hong Kong. We've done Singapore, Bangkok. We actually went to the Kentucky Derby about 10, 15 years ago.
That was
one of the best days out we've ever had. We flew down from New York. We were staying in a camper van.
In the car park.
The 12 Flags Amusement Park.
The glamour. Oh, yes,
but one of the lads said on the Friday night before the big race, he said, I've been invited to this party. Do you want to come? And we all got in this car. We drove around Louisville for a while. We all got a bit lost. And then we turned up at this house, and it was Ry Cooder's party.
Ry Cooder?
Yeah.
And he wasn't in.
Wow.
We had a great time.
He was in, because you kept nicking his guitar and playing punk songs.
Okay. Right,
yeah. Right. What did Ry Cooder make of your old sort of 70s 1, 2, 3, 4 punk?
1, 2, 3, 4. Get your hair cut. He loved it. He put a Louisiana tilt on it. Did you hear?
He did a little bottleneck version of it.
We got on like a house on fire, which is what happened, and they had to call the fire brigade.
The amazing thing is, you also told us you went to the Jockey Club in Hong Kong.
We should say
before the start of this story, that both of you, you're about 6'4", aren't you?
Six.
You're about 6'2". Yeah.
But we were with a young Russian girl called Olga Notkina, who was about 5'2". And we went to the races at Sha Tin, but we were a day early.
Hong Kong.
We were a day early. So they said, there's no racing today. So we said, oh, we'll get... Is there a restaurant? And they pointed us in this door. We went in. We had a lovely Dover sole.
Overlooking the empty racetrack.
Lovely.
The only people there eating fine wines and all the rest.
Beautiful.
And then we said, we'd like to pay. And they said, no, you're jockeys. You don't have to pay.
Your jockeys?
Can we have your jockey number? And we went,
Was this for the Shartin Shire horse meeting?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. I said, with our legs. So he said, jockey number. I went, 4, 3, 1, 2.
They obviously thought the lady, the short lady with 5'2", they thought she was a jockey.
They obviously did, yeah.
So did you have to do a runner or something?
No, I had to go round all the tables where the other diners were, saying, could you pay for our bill? We'll give you the money.
You also told us, and it's a bit visual this, but you did tell us that you had a run in with
a soul legend. Yeah, yeah. Well, we were back at Kentucky Derby on the Sunday, everyone's leaving. So the airport's absolutely jam-packed and there was nowhere to sit, and we were suffering from heat stroke and hangovers. And the only two seats that were vacant were these
massage
chairs.
But if you put
a dollar in, and they would only last for about 2 minutes, and we thought, well, this is going to cost a fortune. So we just sat on the chairs and just shook our shoulders.
Miming as if like Ted Heath.
And who walks past?
But Smokey Robinson.
Smokey Robinson.
And who walks past but Smokey Robinson? It's like the Fast Show, which was nice.
And he starts talking
to us. And he thought it was hilarious.
And he's got a beautiful voice when he talks.
Is he really?
Beautiful. Oh. And then his wife came up.
His wife was shopping. So he said, do you mind if I wait here with you two? Because you look like you're having fun. Did you have the winner, Smokey?
Yes, Andy was an amazing improviser. Obviously, he wouldn't spend that long at the Comedy Store if you were rubbish. And he was always happy to impart his knowledge for people that weren't quite as good.
He was also a very good actor. I saw him in the...
12 Angry Men.
12 Angry Men, and also The Dumb Waiter.
Oh, yeah, the Harold Pinter play. But he did. He would take plays up to Edinburgh, wouldn't he, and do that?
Yeah, brilliant.
But he was one of the kings of improv. And he used to... kind of try and get Andy into it. He used to try and get you to try and do a bit of improv, didn't he? Widely regarded as the world's worst actor, Andy Jacobs. And he thought if he could get a performance out of Andy Jacobs, then he had certainly arrived. He could have a life as a teacher, who knows? So anyway, we're on an outside broadcast at Stamford Bridge, and this is Andy Smart trying to get Andy Jacobs to do a bit of improv.
Andy Jacobs, you are...
Yeah.
The manager of a football team, you're preparing your substitute, who is Andy Smart, before coming on. So, take it away.
Well, you know, very, very...
he said football manager.
No, Andy, I've picked you for a reason. I think
right, boss, right. Yeah, right, I'm ready.
I want you to go out there. I want you to use
you
all
to
the skills that you've got.
Running up and down.
Run up and down.
I can do that.
I want you to let him know you're there.
Okay. Which way are we kicking? No, come on, I'm serious.
You're a bit thick, aren't you?
Well,
you know, I don't really know where
I'm supposed to be building me up before I go on. I can't believe this, boss.
That's one. Well, that's tremendous, wasn't it? It fooled me. I was in the moment there.
So there we
are. Weren't you?
Yeah, you were. That's a start. Yeah. There are only brief cameos, and we'd be here all day otherwise.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So it's now the chairman, and you've brought in the finance director, Andy Jacobs. You're the chairman of the football club, who isn't Roy Hodgson, unfortunately, from your point of view. He can't do all the jobs. And you're discussing buying a new kit with your finance director, Mr. Andy Smart.
Well, you know, I've given up managing.
Just the one impression, but milk it. Doesn't matter. Just it's all right. Doesn't matter.
Well, it's you know, club have come on hard times now, and I've got some sarongs for them. You fancy a team of sarongs this year?
Who am I playing them?
You're the chair. It's great. You're the chairman, Roy Hodgson.
No, clear off. Bates are here. I'm not wasting my money on that rubbish.
All right, then. Well, maybe I could come up with a couple of T-shirts with Team Crest on and some shorts, some nice Bermuda shorts.
How much are they going to retail for?
That's a good Ken Bates, though. That's a memory. There's a few people around this place who were working here. He was here. They're hiding under the tables, including me.
So, yes, as you can hear, Andy Jacobs is quite a terrible actor.
Absolutely.
But Andy Smart, as Andy Jacobs just said, was a very good one and had performed all over the world. And they had this regular gig, didn't they, used to do every year at the Globe, Shakespeare's Globe Theatre in London.
Oh, he loved that.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, they did a few of those kind of... They used to do the Regent's Park as well at times, didn't they? But the Globe was one they absolutely coveted. And Andy one day told us about how that came about, that gig, and also how he played a bit of sport with a Shakespearean actor.
It's my favourite gig of the year. I mean, it's great fun playing at the Store, obviously, every Wednesday and Sunday. Yeah. It's the sort of National Theatre of Comedy. But to play the Globe, where you're in the middle of the stage, you're not more than 50 feet from any one of the 1,400 people that are crammed in there. So it's, and you've got 700 people in the courtyard bit,
standing
in the rain, by the look of it, and no umbrellas allowed. Because that would spoil the view for the people behind. When we first did it, back in, it's our 20th year there this year, and Mark Rylance chose us to sort of come down and do the show there, because he saw us at the Store and said, well, that's how they would have done it.
What's he got under that hat? I know I can't talk.
Yeah, what is under there? Do you think he keeps his sandwiches under it? Ten of pineapple chunks on there.
I haven't seen
him. Have you ever seen him without it?
When we first went down there, he used to say, right, before the show, he'd say, right, we'll have a game of heading tennis. And we'd go, what? And he'd go, well, this is how we warm up before
tennis?
Yeah. What they do is they close the doors on the theatre, and they run a rope from the stage to the middle door and tie it around the handles, and they use that as a net. So it's about sort of neck height for me. And then they play sort of like, it's only allowed to bounce one side, but you can play it off the galleries. And
real head tennis.
It was like real head tennis. Yes. In a proper Elizabethan theatre.
So Ryland doesn't wear the hat when he...
No, he didn't wear the hat when he played that, no.
Peter Cech style hat he wears.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, the amazing thing was, whenever you sat down with Andy and he started telling a few stories, he had just met so many people, wouldn't he? You'd like mention him, any actor, anybody, say, oh, yeah, I met him once, I was in... And, you know, they were just brilliant tales that he always came up with. Well, coming up in a moment, we'll continue over some of Andy's maddest sporting adventures, as well as his work with the amazing homeless charity Crisis. And, of course, the times we spent at Cheltenham together.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Across the evening sky, all the birds are leaving.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And you're listening to a special tribute podcast to our great mate, Andy Smart, who we lost just over a couple of weeks ago. Now, not only did he watch a lot of sport, he got his hands dirty, didn't he?
Yeah.
He would just get right in there. We mentioned Pamplona and his love for Pamplona a little bit earlier on. And he was a regular on the show when he was over there telling us what was going on at the running of the balls. And this is an example of that. So he joined us live from Spain when the event was actually on.
The very first one was 82. That was my first run. Mm. And 62nd this morning. It was very quick this morning. It was 2:11, which is very, very fast.
I was going to say, do you have to run for 2:11? That's quite a long time.
No. Oh, no. No, I ran about 5 yards today.
So they should have a kind of vet's run with a very old ball that just sort of has a little meander, and all you 660 pluses all kind of wander along.
That's a good idea.
Wander along as well, yeah. Pat it on the head as it goes past you.
Yeah, a donkey with some horns on.
Yeah. you'd say every year when we speak to you about it, you know, you get a lot more kind of tourists thinking, yeah, that'll be a fun thing to do. And then you see the look in their eyes when you know that they know the ball's been released and it's about to come round the corner.
Yeah, there were some young American lads this morning, and I said, is it your first run? You could tell by just the way they were shaking. And they said, yeah, have you done it before? I went, yeah, it's my 62nd. And they just went, what?
Yeah, it is an incredible thing. I like the way it starts. The referee, he fires a rocket into the sky. Yeah. Sensational.
I know, yeah, he fires the rocket. And then he fires another one to let you know that they've all left the pen. So you want the two rockets close together.
Hmm.
So you're actually counting the seconds between the two rockets as you're sort of jogging into place where you want to start your run from. Okay. And then people run from Estafeta, or there was Gus, my mate Gus. He's done 208 runs, but he goes to all the different, because there's lots of bull runs all over Spain, and he goes to about 5 or 6 a year. So he's done 208 runs this morning. God.
It's very interesting because everybody's wearing white, but there's a bloke here wearing a red shirt with number one on the back, and the bull's just caught him. You think, red's the last colour I'd wear in front of a bull.
Is that a fallacy or not?
Yeah, because they're actually colourblind, so they can't actually see any colour. So it's all black and white to them. And they just go for movement. They've got very poor eyesight.
So they're not big fans of snooker.
Yeah. They don't watch balls. Don't watch a lot of snooker. No, what a thing to say. Do they? They're sitting there saying, "Oh, he should have screwed back more on that one." Yeah, not great. Not great positional play there by Maguire.
They're big fans of Humphrey Bogart, though.
Yeah,
and all the shops along the side. That can't be good for business, really.
Well, they reopen after the run, I would imagine.
You're doing a lot of trade during.
You wouldn't. Yeah, it's not a time to go down, and do your shopping, is it? Go and get your paper and your Mars bar.
That wasn't just the ball running we always got Andy involved in.
No.
The other big event that he sort of took live for us for quite a few years was the Shrovetide Tuesday football in Ashbourne in Derbyshire.
We treated it like a proper game of football, didn't we?
It was great.
He was our reporter.
It's the upwards and downwards. It's this huge game of football. Hundreds of people playing, trying to get The ball, it's kind of a ball.
There's a river involved.
That's right, yeah. People's front gardens. It's absolutely the maddest game of football ever, and we wouldn't have had anybody else cover it for us, because Andy got right in there in the hug, didn't he? Right, yeah. In the scrum.
We kept going back to, we'd come back to the studio and go back to him. And
that's right, yeah, just during the course of it. Let's go back to Andy's. It was always quite a low-scoring affair.
Yeah.
But anyway, here's a selection of Andy's updates into our show from 2015.
Uppards and downards. I'm playing for the downards, and we've got a lovely day for it. It's absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's the warmest game I've ever played in. It's normally 2 foot of snow on the ground, but the pitch is a bit like Bradford's. It's got firm parts, and there's very muddy areas in towards the goals. It's a lovely day for it.
Have you got the team lineups for us?
Yeah, can you run through the two sides in the formation? We'll be at about 5:30. How many a side is it, Andy? Roughly?
It's about 400 a side, but there's probably only about 100 at a time actually in the hug.
Okay.
So and then there's about 4,000 people watching around the outside of the hug.
Right.
So it's a big deal, and it nearly didn't happen this year because. Yeah. The insurance is a problem, but they've somehow managed to get that together, and it looks like we're going to have a lovely day for it. I'm very excited.
Any goals yet?
No goals. I've got some bad news. It's been through Memorial Gardens twice, even though we've been warned not to be in here.
Oh, no.
It was stuck. First, they got the uppers, got the ball out of the car park, and took it up Madge's corner.
Oh,
and,
dear. I don't understand that. Is Madge okay?
It's the name of a road.
Sorry about that.
Yes, of course.
And then it was up against two cars who obviously parked there thinking that the ball would never go up that way. They've got a few marks on them. And then it went over to
I love the way you brush that under the carpet. There's two cars that have been probably flattened. They've got a couple of marks on them.
The marshals were trying to keep the hug away from the cars, but that's what caused it to then go through the holly hedge and into the Memorial Gardens, where it was run down by the downers, tried to get it down into the river and then through the tunnel under Waitrose. But they've been stopped by the uppers, and now it's just north of the duck pond in the River Henmore, the Henmore Brook at the moment. It's just like the hug is like a big amoeba with the ball as the nucleus, and it just sort of flows and moves, and you've got no telling which way it's going to go. We just nearly got trampled in. It was I got a bit too close to the river just as the ball popped out, and it was literally. On the end of my it got kicked off the end of my toe. I thought I'd got it there. I thought I'd touched it there, but I hadn't.
I was going to say, how many times have you played in this game over the years?
Well, this is actually the 35th anniversary of my first one. So I've probably played in about 20 games since that first one. And I just love it. I mean, the atmosphere is fantastic. The pubs are open. What more could you ask for?
How many times have you touched the ball in those 20 years?
Probably about 50 times.
Oh, that's not too bad. That's not bad. There's some pros who take that in football.
Let's have a look at his touch map over the 35 years.
Yeah, 35-year-old heat map.
Most of it's in the car park, before it gets into the field. Yeah.
How far are you from the ball now, as we speak?
I'm about 20 yards. Do you want me to try and get closer?
If it's up to you, I don't want to get you in there. I just wondered. I can
get in. Now it's now moving quite fast away from me.
Oh dear.
Well, into a children's playground. Oh, here we go. Right, I've caught it up again.
Right. Okay.
It's on the edge of the Memorial Gardens, and they're not happy about that. But the naughty boys are now trying to get it in there. No.
The marshals step in, don't they?
I'm now in the hug now, right at the back of it.
Right at the back of the hug, yeah.
Yeah, and they're saying back off.
Back off?
Back off because everyone's backing off because they don't want it to go in the Memorial Gardens. Someone just got a right hand up right next to the ball. I saw that.
Well, blimey. Deliberate or accidental?
I think he was trying to get it in the Memorial Gardens, so he was punished for his efforts.
It sounds like a self-policed event.
It could be retrospective action.
It could be.
Hold it there. No, hold it. Get him back. Yep. Get it back.
Sporting the roar, ladies and gentlemen.
Get it back.
Get it up.
Squirm
it. I'm now about 4 foot away from it. I can't reach. Oh, God, I'm coming out. Oh.
Okay, you come, Andy. Out you come. We do appreciate you trying to get.
Thanks very much. Much appreciated.
They're
the belly of the beast.
Now. They're laughing at me.
They're laughing. No. Don't let them do it. You get back in there and Shamu's boss.
No, I'm going for a fight now. That's
yeah. It's like football used to be.
Sterling work.
Used to be back in the old days. Go and have a pint.
One of the other sports beyond the Shrovetide Tuesday football was the cheese rolling at Cooper's Hill in Gloucestershire.
Dangerous.
And I'm reading Harry Pearson's new book, No Pies, No Priest, which is a really interesting read. And there's a chapter in it about, he's going to come and talk to us about it in the studio, but there's a chapter in it about the cheese rolling. And Andy Smart was kind of responsible for it becoming big time because no one was really watching it. It was a kind of local do. Mm. And then he went off for Maxim magazine and did a big piece on the cheese rolling. And the following year, there were 4,000 people there to watch it. And he always felt a bit of responsibility that it had got quite big time because of his coverage of it. And here he was in 2016 to watch it unfold.
It's basically a 230-yard hill down a sort of very, very steep slope, almost a cliff face, really. And they sort of let a cheese roll off the top of it, and then they 25 runners run after it. And we've had two men's races so far, both won by Chris Anderson, who's now won about, I think that's his 13th out of 16, the last 16 races he's won. And Flo Sterling won the women's race, although she went through a nettle patch at some speed, and her arms and her stomach are covered in nettle rash.
So dock leaves all round, is it? Everybody's been looking
no
for.
No ideal, yeah. Is it?
I mean, what's their technique?
If I was straight there with the dock leaf, I promise.
Chris and Flo, what's their technique, Andy? I mean, is it the Oasis technique? Do they roll with it? How do they? What do they do? How do they get down the bottom of the hill? What makes them so good at it?
Well, we asked Flo, and she said, "Well, you can't be scared of falling. You've just got to. If you fall, you've just got to let your body flow through the motion of falling, and then bounce back up and try and carry on running."
Are you going off again in a moment for that last run? Or
I'm not going. No, I did it once in '93 and never again.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'd rather run with balls than cheese.
Yeah, I thought they could combine the two, have some balls at the top of the hill, which is tremendous.
The running of the cheese, it sounds like some kind of competition. So what? Why? I mean, you are pretty intrepid, so you're quite able to be chased through the streets of Pamplona by a kind of a rampaging animal, but you won't run after a cheese down a hill. On the face of it, people will be surprised.
It's so steep. It really is like just chucking yourself off a cliff after a piece of cheese.
You wouldn't do that normally, would you?
No. You know that Homer bit where he hits every rock on the way down.
Yeah.
Well, it's like that. Imagine that with 25 people doing it at the same time.
Wow.
And they're getting caught up with each other, and they're doing complete somersaults about 6 foot off the ground because of the speed they're going.
So I mentioned the Cresta run just now. He went off with Marcus Brigstock, his fellow comedian and pal, to go and do that. It was a lifelong ambition to take it on. And he finally got to do it, this kind of ice skeleton racing track. And it's still up there at the moment. I'm sure as a memorial, it will still be there. The kind of pinned tweet on Andy Smart's Twitter is his Cresta run. And it looks terrifying. But anyway, here he is telling us about it.
It's the oldest bobsleigh run in the world. It was invented by crazy English aristocrats back in the 1870s. And it's a very fast track. And you go down, the morning we did it, it was quite warm. So we had to go down on American sleds, which basically the sort of sled that you see in the park. Yeah. But you're going down a proper bobsleigh run, and you go down head first, your chin's about 2 inches off the ice.
Wow.
And when you come out of shuttlecock, you hit stream, you take a right turn, and then there's about a 500-yard straight track. And you're just going, you get up to about 60, 70 miles an hour, and then you go through two more bends, which is like going through a washing machine. And then you sort of hurtle around this corner, and there's a little French guy who sort of stops you, grabs you.
Wow.
As you're going on the upslope. And then you get it back in a van, and you take yourself, they take you and the sled back up, and you do it again.
Blimey.
Shuttlecock was the hardest bit, and you really, because there's no bank to it like a normal bobsleigh track.
Yeah.
And if you come off at Shuttlecock, then you become a member of the Shuttlecock Club and you get to wear a tie.
Right.
And of course,
probably you get to wear a back brace as well, I would imagine.
Well, that's where most of the injuries are, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I managed to get through it all three runs, and so I'm not a member. And I was actually thinking of coming off at Shuttlecock.
Mm. Now, I think one of the reasons that Andy kind of seized the day, never said no to anything, and lived life to the full, because it was nearly a pretty short-lived life, because when he was young, it's a story he tells in the book, he nearly lost his life. This is what he had to tell us.
I did actually die when I was seven, so I was
dead. Really?
Yeah, I was dead for about 2.5 minutes. Yeah, I drowned in a canal, and then
blimey, Lord,
yeah. We never knew that about you.
So I've got two birthdays now. It's great.
Did 7.5 years flash before you?
Well, yeah, there wasn't really much. A couple of football games and a yo-yo. That was it.
So who saved your life then?
My dad, luckily, was a deep sea diver in his first career, and he dived in and he got me out the canal. And then my mum had seen.
He didn't have all the gear on, though, did he? I mean, he wasn't prepared. Great heavy boots and that round helmet.
Mm. It was his birthday as well. We were blackberry picking at, by the Basingstoke Canal, and I tested out my wellies and slipped in down some green gunge on the side. And, I came round on the way to the hospital and threw up all over my mum's best flowery dress. And, I was in hospital for a week while they pumped all the water out of my lungs.
Andy. Yeah. Well, it's good to see you. It's good to know you're here.
That's one of the reasons why I took all the stupid chances that I've done over the years, because I thought I was sort of indestructible. So that's why I went, riding on tops of trains and bull running and skiing at ridiculous speeds.
Do you think it does give you a different outlook then?
Definitely. Yeah. It definitely made me feel sort of invulnerable, yeah.
Yeah, he certainly did seize the day, didn't he? I think it's fair to say he wrung the very last drop out of it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the best moments with Andy came from absolutely nowhere. That something would be going on in the studio, some kind of carnage, or when Andy opened his infamous notebook, Andy Jacobs opened his infamous notebook, and we'd get some of his wacky stories, and Andy Smart would join in. So, little example.
He was a great joiner in it.
Yeah, he was a brilliant joiner in it. That's right. Here's the three of us talking about our famous relatives.
You reckon that 1 in 7 people are related to Genghis Khan?
Yeah, there was a TV programme, I'm sure, about 3 or 4 months ago about saying that, 1 in 7 people on the planet are related to Genghis Khan.
I don't think I am.
He had about...
There's a lot of Genghis in me.
I think there's a little bit of Genghis in you.
I think there is, too, yeah.
It's true.
If you had a horse...
Yeah.
We're all related to someone, of course.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to have a genealogist in the building.
You're related to the Beckhams.
David Beckham and Len Goodman, my aunt tells me.
I'm related to Sam Costa, veteran radio star of the war.
What about you?
I've got Robert the Bruce, apparently.
Of course, that's the ante a bit. If we're playing Tom Trump,
Costa, I must admit.
Beats Len Goodman.
Yeah. Well, he's only known for playing with spiders, really.
Who, Len?
That's your last gig in Scotland, yeah, I would imagine. Yeah. You're going to be doing.
So you've got a spider. Len's got a spider. He takes one leg off. How many are left?
Oh, yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Ridiculous.
Anyway. Why don't you take the leg off a spider? That's the Genghis Khan in you. See? What did I tell you? Pulling the legs off spiders.
He comes to the surface quick.
He's only just realised the fact that he's pulling the legs off spiders. Yeah. And maybe sticking with a bit of total nonsense, here's the three of us discussing the Booker Prize.
It's the Man Booker Prize, this week, or the Booker Prize as we know it.
Yeah.
I don't know who Man is. Is it a man? Is it a bloke called
Man? M-A-N-N.
No, it says here Man, M-A-N. Yeah. I always thought it was M-A-N-N. I know, I don't know why it is. But they're offering odds on it. You can bet on it. And the favourite is... Lads 7-1. So I don't know.
Lads 7-1.
Yeah, there we
go. Is that all you've got for us?
That's what I've got.
Do you know anything more about the book? Lads 7-1. Okay. Man Booker Prize.
7-1 is a very high priced favourite.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, must be the longest.
True, really, yeah.
Lads 7. There's no book called Lads. No, where are you getting that from?
Hold on.
The favourite is The Underground Railroad by Colson White.
That's a brilliant book.
You've read that 2-1. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Andy's giving it a thumbs up.
That's a fantastic book about the slaves going north. That's really good.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Reservoir 13, John McGregor. I've only read one.
Home Fire is 7-1. Sorry, Lads is just in brackets.
Written by a group of blokes.
No, it's written by Camila Shamsi.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Alf's daughter.
Yeah. Sir Alf Shamsie. Well, I can't be right.
No, not at all.
Who's in there that we... Zadie Smith's book's in there, Swing Time.
Oh, yeah.
I've read Lincoln in the Bardo.
Have you?
George Saunders. Yeah, it's good. They're making a film of it now.
It's a very highbrow this show.
Oh, no.
But they're all in there.
Honestly, I wasn't expecting this on the tube.
No, it's not so bad, is it? By the way, Frank de Boer's lost his job, but what about the chances of Paul Auster doing it again? Lads means Ladbrokes, you Burke.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Thank you, Bob and Arbroath. They're the people. Thank you, Bob. They're the people setting the odds.
Not the name of the book.
Come on.
Now, one of Andy's biggest loves was his football team, Farnborough.
Oh, absolutely.
A huge fan. He'd supported the club for over 50 years. He'd even been doing co-commentaries for the in-house radio station. And, I mean, it's just an example of Andy's sort of Farnborough fandom. He joined us just after he commentated on their playoff win, which saw them promoted to the Conference South. They were 1-0 down in this game with Farnborough. And in the 86th minute, they got the winning goal, having fought back into the game. This is how it all unfolded. Andy Smart on commentary duty.
Now Sam Deering's joined the party, comes in the middle. Yeah, if he can find the right pass, which he has to Paul Hodges, now he's got... Thank you. Sam Deering's in! Can he find a goal, Sam Deering? Goal! Sam Deering! Cool, calm, collective! He finds the bottom corner and the crowd are going ballistic and it's a goal! It's a goal, goal, goal!
What a great through ball. Sam started that run from the edge of the halfway line and he's run a good 40 yards there through the defence. Some idiot's thrown a flare on the pitch again.
We don't care about flares! 2-1! Don't throw flares!
Well, you do care about flares.
So you do
clearly.
Care about flares.
Ultimately.
That was like a South American commentary, wasn't
well,
it?
It's good. Oh. Well, maybe not the accent.
No.
But, yeah, so there we are. That's what the Southern League Premier Division South playoff finals do to a man.
They forget the Hampshire Cup.
That's right.
It's a double.
It was the double.
Oh,
the
yeah.
sensible head there was our good friend Andy Smart. And good afternoon.
Yeah.
And you were looking... It's such a good thing that you don't have VAR in those leagues. And imagine him... Oh, no, he's offside! Awesome. Don't throw flares.
The other guy was is Chris Payne. He's a lovely man, and he gets very excited when we score. But to be fair to him, he gets very excited when the other teams score. When we played down at Taunton, he was doing the commentary. And when Taunton scored, he went, "Go, go, go, go!" And the Taunton photographer turned around and went, "He's very fair, isn't he?"
Too fair. You don't want that.
It was a tense affair, as you can imagine, because it's such a big thing for us to get back into the Conference South. It's where we really belong.
So are you now two divisions off League Two? Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, we're only six divisions off the Premiership.
Yeah, definitely. So this is the best moment for you as a Farnborough fan since when, would you say, Andy?
I'd say since about the Arsenal game back in 2000. But yeah, no, it's
that's a long time.
Yeah.
You are the face, the public face of Farnborough. Do you get a bit of stick from the fans? I mean, Chelsea fans hate me, you know, because anybody that speaks publicly about the club. Do you get any of that?
Yeah, there's a little group. Andy Buffton often, as I walk past, he goes, "Oh, there's a funny man."
Oh, yeah. Maybe he means it. Maybe he actually means it.
That's brilliant.
They're all very nice to me down there, especially John, who does the parking, and Paul Pullen, who looks after the pitch with Kevin. They're all very nice to me down there.
It's got John who does the parking. If you're when you're in the Premier League, you won't be able to talk about John who does the parking. Have a whole parking department all at about $200,000 a year, won't you? Well, I think the place that we would most associate with Andy Smart is Cheltenham and the Cheltenham Festival.
Absolutely.
He was a big punter, loved having a punt, loved Cheltenham, loved all the big meetings, but especially the Cheltenham Festival, staying at John Joe's Yard.
Yeah.
He had a little billet there, didn't he, he would stay for a couple of days. When we started to do the festival, we knew Andy was a racing fan. Again, he was a great joiner in it. Mm. We got him involved. We'd always make sure he did first a day and then a couple of days.
And eventually he did all four days.
I think he was more or less turning up if he could afford to do it. We used to get some great tips, didn't we? I mean, as I said, I always seem to punt with Andy on a bad day. And the days I ignored his tips, he had a good day. That's the way it tended to work.
He was a clever punter. He really studied it.
And, yeah.
But it wasn't just the day. I mean, he'd come with us afterwards.
Yeah, we'd go out in the evening. Loads of stories over a few pints of Guinness. It was always a joy. Let's play you some of our favourite Andy Smart moments from the Cheltenham Festival.
We have different guests joining us in the box. And on Thursday, we earmarked Andy Smart, the ball runner, comedy store player. And unfortunately, he wasn't able to get a ticket for a Gold Cup day. So he thought he'd be going home last night.
Yeah.
But luckily, the good people at Paddy Power took pity on him.
Yeah.
Got him in today. He managed to get hold of a ticket courtesy of Paddy. And like a bad penny, here he is again. Andy Smart, welcome back.
Ha-ha! You thought you got rid of me?
Yeah.
Welcome back. And, of course, obviously wearing the same clothes as yesterday. But not the same pants and socks.
No. There was a quite worrying moment where Paddy Power has obviously got his Paddy Power pants. And you saw those and you said, right, yeah, that's one thing I do I would like to change. But for some reason, you started to head for the balcony here. You're going to change your underpants on the balcony. But thankfully, you were just picking up your bag near the balcony to have a wash and brush
and a free pair of socks as well. Paddy's done me proud.
That's right.
I feel much better now.
Now, Andy, last night you slept with the TalkSport staff. Yeah. I don't mean literally.
We're definitely worth staying over.
What a night it was. on the sofa.
On the sofa, which had been slept on many times before because the two cushions were sagging down either side of a wooden bit in the middle. So it was like sleeping hanging over a wall.
Always very comfortable.
Could be being part of one of those magicians' levitation tricks.
Yeah. Luckily, the 15 pints of Guinness made me sleep through it.
Andy Smart has joined us.
Well, this is the big one. Never mind the Gold Cup.
Yeah, I mean, the Gold Cup is one thing, but Cheltenham's reddest face is a competition we've been holding for many years. During Cheltenham week, as we're here, we do see a lot of very red-faced people. I don't know if it's the alcohol, it's the blood pressure.
Well, it's a combination of the alcohol, the country living, and the sort of blustery conditions.
I mean, really, ideally, to
more the alcohol.
The person judging it should be John Ruddy.
He should be back.
We can't afford John Ruddy. So, a man that's won this competition on a number
many
of
years, yeah, many years.
I'd say the Ruby Walsh of Cheltenham's reddish face, and that is Andy Smart. Andy, you're judging this year. I'm not sure how good a radio this. You're going to look at five.
Well, it's quite good. I've got the Pantone colours up.
Oh, okay, yeah. Right.
We've got flame scarlet.
Yeah.
Carmine
I'm going to
red.
Start putting money on these. Stop it.
Goji berry.
Goji berry. What race is it in? Okay.
Well, we start with the guy on the back of a... He's on one of the training machines that the jockeys use.
Yeah.
And he's...
Well, he would have a red face there. He could be exerting himself.
He's really exerting himself.
I think we've got to rule him out.
I think he's going to have to be disqualified.
Okay, gone.
That's an enhanced red face. Yeah. The next one we've got is a lovely picture of a waiter.
Yeah.
Because obviously you can't just take a picture of someone who's got a red face.
Yeah, you have to have someone in there for.
You have to pretend you're taking something else.
Yeah,
exactly.
But he's sort of got that vermilion tinge. He's got a chance.
Yes, I'd say they describe it as Pantone adrenaline rush.
Adrenaline rush red. That's the Pantone reference.
Although he doesn't look like he's doing anything that might cause an adrenaline rush.
No. No, he's sitting in the bar with a glass of wine in his hand. He's in the frame, is he?
Yeah.
The next guy has made a terrible mistake. He's wearing a waistcoat which has got a very sort of dark red back on it, and it matches his face.
Well, that could be good.
Matching face and waistcoat.
Oh, that's got to be extra points, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
that's just really sort of gloating, isn't it?
Yes, like, indeed.
Look how red my face is. It's the same colour as my waistcoat. Now we've got Presbury Park in bed.
Stockley Park. He's known as Presbury when he's
Park
here.
Well, he is.
But he's disqualified because he's basically a red sock. Yeah.
But he's got a red face.
Yeah, but he's a red sock. That's not... It's not someone who's...
Yeah, no, disqualified.
He's out.
I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
I'll have to tell him.
Tell Sockley he's out of the running. He'll be gutted.
He's disappointed, really.
Yeah, of course he is. He's got all his Cheltenham gear on. And finally, Andy.
There's two more.
Oh, blimey.
There's the one with Andy... stood in front of a guy in a green tweed suit who is on the phone, and he's quite weird because
he's red all around the middle of his face. Yeah. He's still pink around the outside. So I'm going to have to put him down to about third, I think.
Okay.
And then the last one is, I think that was probably last night, was it? There's a bottle of, you've taken a picture of a bottle of Singer.
Yes.
Other beers are available. And sat behind him is a very red man. Very red man. And another
got the Pantone reference, Andy? Is it more crimson?
Sangria.
Oh, wow. Sangria is the reference.
Sangria.
So does he look like our winner?
I think he's the winner. Yeah, he's Mr. Vermilion to me.
Well done. Well done to him.
Not happy
Sockley.
About it.
Sockley
not
could
happy.
Do a, he could very do an emu. Michael Parkinson, this guy by the throat. Not good.
Get
anyway,
sock off me.
Beautifully judged.
Every year with you, we play the Peter O'Sullivan game where we basically commentate on whatever you've seen.
Yeah.
But we've decided a new version of it this year.
Right, okay.
It's Peter O'Sullivan commentates to lyrics of famous songs.
I don't know why we started doing it. We started doing it just earlier on. We were listening. Whenever you enter the Cheltenham... So we were wondering if Peter O'Sullivan had made an album in the style of his commentaries.
Oh,
you know, my milkshake brings all the boys to the yard. They're like, and it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I'll teach you, but I have to charge my milkshake. You get the idea.
And it's an old man turned 98. He won the lottery and died the next day. It's black fly in your Chardonnay. It's death row pardon. 2 minutes too late. Isn't it ironic, don't you think?
Yeah, it would be good, wouldn't it? Peter O'Sullivan sings all that long, long time ago. I can still remember. Bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove the Chevy to the Levers. I mean, it would get a bit irritating, I mean, as you're proving.
It'd be a great album.
It would be a bit irritating.
Sadly.
Are you prepared to have a go?
I'll have a go, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
As a great improviser.
Knees up, Mother Brown. Knees up, Mother Brown. Under the table, you must go. You get the idea of that. You want to give to any song you like.
Pretty women out walking with gorillas up my street. Is she really going out with him? Is she?
I believe she is. Oh, no.
Fantastic. I hear that trainer coming. It's coming round the bend.
Yeah.
So look, I've seen sunshine since I don't know when.
It wouldn't be Cheltenham without you, Andy. Oh, you're always
fantastic
with us.
Well,
no, look, I think it would go on.
No.
You know,
I don't. I mean the whole of Cheltenham. I mean
important.
Our show at Cheltenham. It wouldn't be H&J at Cheltenham without you, Ed.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So there we are. We hope we've given you a flavour of what Andy's all about. The other thing that people will remember if they listen to the Christmas show, especially the Christmas Eve show, is his work with Crisis, the homelessness charity. He had a little spell where he was homeless, and I don't think he ever quite forgot that, Andy.
Mm.
And he always wanted to do what he could. It was a charity very close to his heart, especially at Christmas. And every year he would volunteer throughout the festive period and he would work for the charity. And he used to come in on the Christmas Eve show with the listeners and talk about what he was about to do and why everybody's small contribution made such a difference.
You are volunteering for Crisis once again. Crisis
15th year.
15, it's amazing. 15 glorious.
When I started in 2007, the numbers were going down, and now they've just, I mean, it's crazy now. I mean, they've gone up, homeless people have gone up, the number of people sleeping on the streets has gone up 52% since last Christmas.
So. Wow, way.
That's bad. It's terrible.
You feel it at any time of the year, but when it's really cold and you look at me, it's got to be terrible.
I know, out there today, it must be... Oh.
Mm. Yeah.
Since I've been started, really. We've been doing it in schools. One year we had the BBC, the old BBC rehearsal studios for 1 year before they knocked them down. And we had an office building by the city airport for 3 years. That was good. And then we were doing it in schools. So we'd take over a school and they'd sleep them 60 to the gymnasium and sort of another 60 in the dance studio, whatever the school had, really.
And it's worth pointing out, it's not just shelter, is it? You tell us, it's worth kind of recapping on what the
idea is that we give them a good Christmas, basically. And in giving them a good Christmas, they come in and they have a bit, you know, they have their big Christmas dinner on Christmas Day and they have entertainment in the evening and stuff. But while we've got them there, we can also, they get checked for TB. They have a podiatrist comes in and checks their feet because they get a lot of trouble with their feet because they don't get a chance to wash them that often. They get seen by the dole people. They get seen by housing people. They get seen by doctors. They get haircuts. They get fresh clothing. They get, it's just, when you see the transformation from the first day
to the last day. It's unbelievable the difference in the way just the way they're walking down the corridors. You know, their heads are up, yeah. And they get to talk to all the volunteers as well, and which is just human contact is so important to them. You know, especially this time of year.
Do you hear stories of people that you've seen come and go over the 15 years that do come back, or do you ever get a chance to update their stories? Turn their lives around.
We've had. I mean, there was my favourite one was Ken. He was so poor, and he was ex-army, and when his dad died, he didn't have any money, so he walked from London to Leeds.
Wow.
Missed the funeral, obviously, put some flowers on his dad's grave, and then walked back. So it took him 6 weeks. He wasn't there 1 year, and then the next year he came back as a volunteer, and I said, what have you been up to then, Ken? And he'd been trained as a chef, and he'd got a job working for a family, cooking for a very rich family, and he was living in Knightsbridge cooking food with his
Fantastic.
Family. So, I mean, that was the big success story.
So there we go. That was our old mate Andy Smart, really, in a nutshell. He was an incredibly kind and selfless and generous man.
Brilliant bloke.
And I think we'll finish with his work for Crisis. If you would like to make a donation today in his honour, there'll be no flowers at the funeral. The family have asked that people make donations to Crisis, so that's what we'll be doing. So if you would like to make a small donation in Andy's name, I know that would have meant a lot to him. If you go to crisis.org.uk, that's crisis.org.uk, for more information. It's very, very simple to donate. So there we are. That's it for our special podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed that. It's a kind of bittersweet listen, really, from our point of view, because we always kind of felt he was indestructible, didn't we?
Absolutely.
Even though he was 63.
Yeah, it was such a shock.
And he'd lived his life at 11. You kind of think people like Andy are always going to be around. But I think everybody out there has probably suffered a bereavement where someone you can't quite believe has gone. So we will miss him. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.